This is the Love Foco Show.
To take on a project of 48 homes felt totally impossible.
Yes.
It required a lot of faith and a whole lot of, wow, if we step over this threshold, will the community rise up to support us?
Yeah.
Huge risk. And guess what? We just raised the walls on the final four homes.
That's amazing.
The final four homes. I mean, we really just can't believe it.
Welcome to the Love Foco Show. Our podcast highlights the incredible people who make Fort Collins the place we're proud to call home. Each week, your host, Jeff Faust, sits down with local leaders, community champions, and change makers to share their stories, what they love about our city, and how they're helping it thrive. So whether you're out on the trail, at a brewery, or walking through Old Town, thanks for tuning in.
Hey everyone, Jeff Faust here, your host for the Love Foco Show. So excited for today's interview with Kristen Candela, the Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity right here in Fort Collins. The work that she is doing is incredible. They're building houses for so many different individuals and families. You're not going to want to miss the way that they are building true lives and livelihood for folks in our community, but also engaging in community development, getting so many different volunteers on board. And you know, her leadership and influence comes from a wonderful story of exposure to Habitat for Humanity, informative times of her life, as well as just her own family journey. So I'm so excited to be able to share this conversation with you.
Hey, listeners. Before we start today's episode, I want to tell you about a fun way you can support neighbors in need while bidding on amazing rewards. Introducing Foco.gives, a charity auction with a twist. Every bid is a donation to Love Foco, a new resource center that will serve 1,500 families each month. Browse unique auction items, place your bid, and earn free bids along the way. Whether you win or not, you're making a real difference. So visit foco.gives today, where every bid builds hope.
Well, Kristen, thank you so much for giving part of your day to me and being able to sit down and join the Love Foco Show. This whole podcast is dedicated to sharing stories of incredible people doing incredible things. You're one of those folks in our community. And so I'm so grateful that that you're sitting down with me. I can't wait to get into your story and how you're making an impact in our city. But the way I love to start this conversation is to just learn a little bit about, you know, your background and origin story. Like, what is your Fort Collins origin story? I don't know. Have you ever read comic books?
But a little bit.
A little bit. So I'm not a big comic book guy either, but I watch movies.
Okay.
And they always have like an origin story. Like, where did this person come from? What about their background not only landed them in the position they're in, but like, you know, what brought them into, you know, their superpowers. And you have a number of them. And so tell us a little bit about your journey to Fort Collins. Like, how did you grow up here? What was your background like? How did you become who you are today?
Well, I love Foco. You know, that's a great start.
Yeah.
I love movies. I'm a movie junkie. So origin stories are incredibly important. And my origin story is this community. You know, I grew up in Fort Collins and I do what people that grew up here do. I say I went to Beatty, Bolts, Rocky, and then CSU.
That's amazing. That is amazing. Now, I have just a really important clarifying question. You said you grew up here, but were you also born here?
No, I was not born here.
So this is what I'm learning.
I was not born here. I am a Colorado native.
Okay, okay.
But not in an excluding anybody way.
Right.
I think people got here as soon as they could.
And then we don't leave. That's the other thing.
Like, I'm not bad at that. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
I grew up in Denver. I moved to Fort Collins in fourth grade.
Okay.
And I was only child, don't hold it against me, of a single parent.
Yeah.
My mom. We moved from Denver, and Fort Collins was a welcoming place.
Yeah.
It was pretty empty at the time, if you can imagine the fountains in Old Town and no cars on the streets.
Well,
and
what I've heard is that it's changed a lot.
It was sleepy. It wasn't quite as energetic, but there was some charm to it for sure.
Yep.
And, you know, my origin story, I think what's really important to me about it, looking back, was that my mom was a force for good, and she was hardworking, like so many single parents are, just trying to make ends meet.
Oh, but you have to be.
You have to be.
Yeah.
You have to be. She was an entrepreneur. She sold furniture. She had a store on College. She was the safe place for a lot of my friends, and she bought our first home not that long after we moved here, but long enough where we had jumped around from apartment to apartment and then finally bought our first home.
Yep.
So that was when I felt like, oh, this is our home. We
right.
really live here now, and
this
I can walk to
place.
Elementary school. Like,
yeah.
this is it.
Yep.
So I feel like that's a pretty important part of my origin story,
yeah.
was that security that finally happened and that rootedness in a community that felt really neighborly and warm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and a big difference from Denver. I mean,
you
moved here, I think you said fourth grade?
Yes.
So you have memories of Denver. You have memories
yeah.
of, I mean, it's just it's a metro. You
it
know,
is.
It's lovely. I mean, what we like yep. to go down to Denver, and there's different things that Denver has to offer than,
yes.
than Fort Collins.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a different culture here.
For
and
sure.
the neighborhoods are, you know, they're just, you have an opportunity to live at a slightly mm-hmm. slower pace. The friendliness is just, I think, maybe more apparent
yeah.
than a growing metro. Mm-hmm. The traffic, no matter what people complain about, is better than
it
Denver.
Is better.
I
moved back
better.
As an adult. It is better.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And so tell me a little bit about that, Jerry, because I grew up, my mom was a single mom as well. A couple of, one when I was really, really young, my older brother, and then older in life as well. Mm. That survivor mentality, that entrepreneurship, that really rings true for me. I mean, my mom always had side hustles.
Mm.
And she was always like, I can start this after school thing and get a little extra cash and we can do this and we can do... even watching a parent do that, it like builds something within, I think.
Absolutely.
And now it can be, there's some hardship to that too, of course.
Yep.
But it provides an opportunity for you, like, well, I can learn from this and I can watch this, and the sacrifice that I see consistently, it's good to honor. I feel like it's good to honor that. I find myself honoring my mom for the ways that she sacrificed and did those things.
Oh, 100%. She was never afraid of work, and she also was very, very welcoming. She didn't have a lot of time outside of working because she had to work so hard to make ends meet. So, you know, the fact that she then took time to welcome in the teenagers that didn't know where they fit into our home, which wasn't, you know, any kind of special home. I had all the friends with the big houses, right? And that's not what we had. We had this, I like to kind of joke about my house because it wasn't attractive, right? I mean, and not even by standards at that day and age, right? It had the green sculptured carpet, like the deep green.
Yes.
And then the basement had the red shag and the full brown paneling on the walls.
I can picture this
like,
right now.
You can picture it, right? And so
but
it
if you make a mess or you spill something, like it just kind of disappears.
That was an asset. It
like
really
it just
was.
Goes down.
It was.
It disappears. Who knows what you're stepping on after
Magic.
A couple of years of that. But yeah. You could throw some parties and like you wouldn't get in trouble. It
That's
just
a fact.
Would go away.
That's a fact. Yes, this came in handy several times.
Yeah, I bet. Oh man, isn't it true too? Like when you have a hospitable heart, like it sounds like your mom had a welcoming heart, that when you get the keys to your own place and you've got a young daughter who's elementary, middle, you know, eventually a teenage daughter in Fort Collins. That hospitable heart paired with a home can turn into an environment where your friends can rest, where they can receive love, where friendships and bonding can happen in a different kind of way.
Yeah.
Than if you're always like maybe meeting outside. Or I mean, there's just something about the home that brings
100%.
that groundedness in a different kind of way.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah. That's
Yeah, that's really sweet. I bet there's a lot of good memories there, and
yeah, many, many funny memories. I mean, to the point where my friends and I eventually pulled up that shag carpet and there was linoleum underneath, and then we painted the brown paneling.
Yes.
So we gave it new life.
Yes.
But there's a certain, I think about that now as a parent of teenagers.
Yeah.
I try to imagine, what if their friends were trying to do a DIY project on my house?
Yes. Yes.
Would I have that same warm and welcoming kind of mentality? Probably
yeah.
not.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine some of that got placed inside of you from a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
And so I bet you're probably better at it than you.
Yes.
You realize
no,
you know,
my house is that hub for people.
Yeah.
It is.
We have I mean all of us. My wife still to this day talks about some of her childhood friends where like the door was always open.
Mm-hmm.
And there were always, you know, like the best snacks that were there. And food will bring a crowd, by the
for
way.
Sure.
This is what I'm learning. and she talks about how her parents were always throwing like holiday parties, and they would do the theme parties. So maybe it was less like the regular kind of stop-ins, but more of some of the events. And I watch my wife today; she's always ready to cook a meal. She's always ready to have someone out, and like you can see how that trickles in.
It trickles
down from family to family and parent to child, and that's really sweet. So tell me a little bit about like growing up here in Fort Collins. What did you, what kinds of stuff were you up to? I mean, what, you know, did you play sports? Were you academically inclined? Where did you find yourself spending time and effort?
Yeah, I played softball in high school, and you know, to this day, my family teases me a little bit that I had a lot of pride in being a buckaroo.
Okay, yes.
That I saved that kind of buckaroo jacket from fast pitch competitive softball for far too many years.
Yeah.
It might be in the garage now.
I love that. You should have worn that for the interview. It would have been so good.
You know, maybe next time. Yeah. No, I was an outfielder. I like to brag a little bit that I was, you know, fourth in line when batting.
Yep. Yeah. Hey, that means you could slug.
It was the biggest part I offered to the team. I wasn't very fast. I wasn't a great fielder, but I could hit the ball.
So like right field then?
I was in left field.
Left field?
Yes.
Yep.
I was in left.
Yeah. Those corner outfielders though, like, I mean, center field's different. You got to range a lot.
Yeah.
Corner outfield, you can get away with
that's
maybe
true.
Less range.
Yeah, that's right.
Easier to throw to third base.
Yes.
And
fact.
Your bat will help the team.
That's a fact.
Extra base hits and... Mm-hmm. Home runs?
No, I don't think I got home runs. I was kind of a triple kind of gal, but I felt really good about that.
Yeah.
I should not be talking about this. It's so embarrassing. This
no,
is why my
I
family teases me.
I love it. This is going to be memorized, like memorialized forever.
Oh, no.
It's so good.
I'm going to talk about the buckaroos anymore. the other thing I was really into, I loved theater. I had been a theater kid since I was little, you know, from... Just doing the ducky daddle, wear a ducky costume, a little literal duck on stage and sing with your little elementary school kids to, you know, doing plays up into CSU. And I always enjoyed it. I just liked the community of it. I liked the range of talents people had, I don't know, the fact that theater people could just make fun out of nothing.
Yes.
You know, it was a joy. You know, you'd go to a party and maybe there wasn't partying happening, but somebody was rapping in the corner and somebody else was singing and turning the thing into a musical.
Yep.
Just was a great group of people to
There's
be part of.
There's just incredibly talented people around us. There just really are.
Exactly.
I think that's really sweet. That's really special. So tell me the journey again one more time. You said it so clearly at the beginning. You're what school to what school to what school? Can you share that?
I can do it again.
Yeah.
Beatty,
yep.
Bolts,
okay.
Rocky,
yep.
CSU.
And then CSU.
So yeah.
Did you just, like growing up here, fourth grade, because like you're just growing up in the community, falling in love with the community.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, like when did you know you wanted to go to CSU? Was that early? Was that later in high school? Or
you know, that's a great question. I don't know that I knew I wanted to go to CSU. I actually went to UNC first.
Okay.
And then ended up at CSU after doing study abroad. And growing up here, I think my attachment was to Fort Collins.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a student coming in and my attachment was to CSU. CSU was just part of this bigger, broader, beautiful community. And so
yep.
I wasn't looking forward to moving into the dorms and being at CSU. That wasn't my motivation. I thought it was just a beautiful part of our community.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. I don't think I was a Lobo at Rocky or a Ram at CSU. I think I was always a Love Foco.
Yeah, you're just person. A hometown girl. This is just
yeah,
a
I'm
city.
A hometown
this,
girl. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, so many people have fallen in love with this community. It's sweet that you have like a real history here.
Yeah.
Growing up, and these schools mean something to you. They mean something to our community. And
they do.
Yeah, Fort Collins is just a great. It is a great place to live.
It is a really great place, and I think such an interesting dynamic of having, you know, been a Colorado native and then growing up here back when it was sleepy.
Yeah.
I see that push pull and that tension between what we were and what we want to hold on to and the desire for what we can become. Right. That kind of push and pull back and forth of are we growing or are we going to stay the same or how do we even go backward? Right. Mm-hmm. Because we miss that sleepy town and no cars on the road.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's I love being in the middle of that as we think about who we want to be.
Yep.
Because I think that really what is true to Fort Collins for me is that it was a welcoming place.
Yeah.
It was a friendly place. And how you keep that character in the community is more important to me than the number of cars on the road.
That's a really important conversation. And I imagine a lot of great leaders, influential people in our community are having that conversation. Because as you progress and as you grow and as things expand, you really do want the fabric and the kind of the DNA of the community, mm-hmm. the reason why people love this place in the first place,
yeah.
to like stay ingrained yes. in who we are. And that's a challenge.
It is.
Especially when you have people moving from all over the world. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a transplant. So I came from the Midwest, mm-hmm. moved here from Kansas City. And man, I can even see that push and pull just in the last mm-hmm. handful of years
yeah.
that I've been here. And I would say it's worth fighting for to keep some of that really true to who we are because mm-hmm. it is. It's what makes not Fort Collins just a beautiful place to live, mm-hmm. but really a warm, inviting, hospitable place to be.
Absolutely.
Which shapes lives in a different kind of way than just, nice amenities.
It does. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit. I'm just find myself curious. I studied abroad as well. Mm-hmm. Where did you study? What'd you do? Where'd you go?
I studied in England.
Amazing.
And if my grandma had her way, she would tell you that I went to Oxford University, but I did not. I went to Oxford Brookes Polytechnic.
Hey, first word counts. First word counts. Take it and run.
I have taken it and run with it.
Yes.
It was great. It was really an exceptional experience to,
yeah,
just to live somewhere else, to see the world differently, to understand our place in the world as not being the center of the universe, right?
Yeah.
Well,
this is one of the challenges. Yeah. I mean, my wife and I have this conversation with our kids a lot. Like, y'all need to get out every now and then. We hope that we can create an environment and we hope that we can be part of a greater city that they love so much that maybe they would like to stick around. But if they don't actively get out of Fort Collins and have their worldview expanded and shaped and actually encounter different cultures and backgrounds and socioeconomic municipalities. I mean, the reality is Fort Collins, although there's pockets of poverty, we're going to talk about how you're making a difference in those spaces. The reality is it's pretty nice.
Yes.
And if our kids don't get out, they won't be exposed to some of the things that are like that you would see on a national or international scale.
Absolutely.
And those opportunities
no
to study abroad, I think they can shape you in a great way.
No question. I think it should be required. And I think a very common thing for someone that grew up here, as great as we knew it was to leave. And I did leave. I left for a number of years to live in California before I came back to Fort Collins. And I can certainly appreciate it now in a very different way.
Yeah.
And also, it raises concerns for me as I think about our growth. because I've seen it done in ways that do have unintended consequences that leave people out. Mm. Living in California during the dot-com boom was very instructive.
Yeah.
Right? You had people that were homeowners that did very, very well and thrived. And then you had people that all of a sudden couldn't stay in the area. Students, right. Young people, you know, folks that were really working the community and making it run yeah. were all of a sudden driving hours and hours and hours
and
to do their work.
That is a big deal. I mean, that is a really big deal when the civil servants of your community
yes.
cannot afford to live in your community. We've got to intervene at that point. I mean, we have to make sure that the salt in the earth of our community can like actually call this place home.
Absolutely.
Then you don't have to commute 45 minutes away.
It changes your community when your teacher is working three jobs. My
yes.
son's teacher said she worked three jobs when I went to the parent-teacher conference. And I could not imagine what that looked like to be all in as a teacher working
yep.
with high school students and then working two
yep.
side hustles.
Yeah.
It's just, it changes the DNA of the community when you lose the people that are investing their life in it.
Yeah. No, in a huge way. And gosh, if you haven't been in a school lately, you know it's already hard.
Yes.
Like it's already, you're dealing with all the pubescent children running around and bumping into each other, and there's different smells and there's different sounds, and then you've got to lead those classrooms.
Yes.
And then go home and what, you got to Grubhub or have a side hustle to
yeah.
to make ends meet. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a challenge.
It is.
That is a challenge for sure. Let me poke around that California thing for a little bit, because when there's that kind of economic disparity that you explained in the kind of the dot-com era where there's maybe incredible wealth. And then that growing divide between the people who can make it and people who can't.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is you can look at the growing economic wealth and forget about neighbors. And you can, like, that creates a big shadow.
Yeah.
And it just raises prices. Like, I mean, all of a sudden housing's going to go up, rent's
yep.
going to go up, people are going to have multiple homes, and they're going to rent out space to others, and you can...
Yep.
You can imagine, I think many can imagine, that cascading effect that it can have on a community. To what degree maybe do you see that in our community here in Fort Collins? Not California, not quite dot-com like era, but there's still an economic divide in our community. And
huge.
Haves and have-nots, and the ability to purchase multiple properties
yeah.
or the ability to purchase no property. So like, how has, you talk about how that was a learning experience for you. What kind of parallels might you see right now in our current mm-hmm. community?
Well, it's getting harder and harder for working people to survive. The middle class is diminishing, and housing in particular is getting further and further out of reach. You know, people that bought a house 20 years ago are not even in the same ball game as people that might be trying to buy it now.
Right.
Right? If the median house price is over $600,000,
my goodness.
Right? And
yeah.
you have to earn, say $125,000 a year to yep. be able to afford that house.
Even interest rates aren't what they were
right.
5 years ago or whatever, you know, whatever
right.
it was. Yeah.
You just can't get in,
yeah.
right? And if you can't get in, then you can't build wealth. And if you are still renting is great for various seasons of life and for all kinds of reasons. But if you can't get in and your rent keeps going up, that dream you might have to own a
yeah.
home gets further and further out for
yeah.
you. And
that ability to grab like
yeah.
the down payment and build the nest egg so that you can, it just, yeah, the target keeps moving.
The target keeps moving, you know, and as someone myself who feel like I bought my house by the skin of my teeth over a decade ago, I think now about the season of life I'm in this sandwich generation where I have a mom and she is aging and I have kids that are about to go to college. And I think of all the ways my house supports me being able to protect my family. It's insulation,
yep.
right? I may have to use funds out of my house to help with my kids' college. I may have to use funds out of my house to help my mom at some point. That house is the hub of my family in so many ways, not just where the teenagers can come,
yep.
but it's financial protection, it's mobility.
Yeah.
Right? And I think about it in data, but I think about it as my own life experience that generational wealth building it just sounds like a term that we say, but it is about your retirement, is about your kids' college. It is about, you know, being able to, yeah, have mobility for your family. I mean, the data shows it. Homeowners have average savings of over $250,000 and renters have $6,000.
Yep.
You know, so you multiply that generation to generation and you see how that disparity, how it just continues to create a bigger disconnect between the haves and the have-nots.
Yep.
Right? It just goes on and on.
Yeah, and with the pace of life, the economies that are somewhat volatile and job market that can be challenged, I mean, I could see that gap widening.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and so I'm the director and CEO of Habitat for Humanity in Fort Collins, and our homes to build have doubled in cost.
Wow.
In the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And yet we know salaries have not increased at right. that same rate, clearly.
Yeah, yeah, so I know. That would buyers, be nice, but it's
right,
not.
Right, that's not what's happened. Not for anybody. Maybe for some people. But, you know, you can't have a doubling cost of a product.
Right.
Have a scarcity of a product because it's a great community to live in.
Yeah.
You know, and have those costs rise in that way and still provide opportunity for people. It's just there's a supply issue in our community for sure.
Well, let's talk about that because you just mentioned, and man, the reason why I wanted to have you on this show is because not only your expertise and your history, I'm learning about how even your personal story played into all of this as well. But as the executive director of Habitat for Humanity, you're probably doing a lot of things. You're probably doing a lot of things with things that people probably think building houses, but I know it's way more. I know it's way more than that. But tell me a little bit. I want to dig into all the ways that you're loving our city, all the ways that you're giving back, and I know it's a whole team, a whole organization behind that. But before we jump right into that, tell me, just help me understand this concept of generational wealth and maybe even breaking the cycles of generational poverty, how housing can impact that. Because I think I know what you're saying, but I would love to talk a little bit more about it. In your own story, I hear about your mom moving up here, apartments, condos here and there. And then landing in that spot where she can call, this is our home.
Yeah.
And how, I think you said it brought a sense of stability, but then you were also able to use different gifts like your hospitality and your ability to welcome folks. Mm-hmm. So there's, I even hear a wealth of relational economy there, that's emotional economy, that's all growing in addition to like real dollars and cents and financial stability.
Yeah.
And you are talking about that with your own journey on how it was hard to find a place, where can I get? And I'm trying to scratch together a down payment and now I have it.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about, I would love to tease that out a little bit more about how houses can impact that. You shared a stat about $250,000. So what does that mean when you say that? Because I have a home, but I don't have $250K in savings. So you're not talking about liquidable cash. You're talking about something beyond that. So just fill me in on some of that.
Yeah, most Americans generate wealth by just paying down their mortgage.
Yeah.
That's it. It's sitting in their house. It's not liquid, but it is their savings.
Yep.
And they can use it if they need to. They can go get a HELOC, a loan on their house. They can get a second mortgage. They can adjust to life circumstances by leveraging their house. And that's really where most Americans are saving is inside that house. And so if you're renting and you see these constant increases in the cost of rent, then it's very, very difficult to put money away. It's very difficult, as you said, to get that down payment or to ever buy a home. But it also can be very difficult to save just because of the inflation and the costs of everything these days.
It's hard to outpace inflation sometimes.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
And then you talked about being mobile.
Yeah.
So are you talking like job changes and now you have an asset you can sell so that you can go buy another home? Or like, what do you mean when you say it increases the ability for a family to be mobile with their assets or savings?
Yeah, I mean mobility in a different sense. And, you know, it's hard for me not to reference Habitat for Humanity in this. So I think I will. We frequently see that once someone's housing is stabilized, everything else shifts.
Okay.
Right? If you remember a season where you moved a bunch, you felt nomadic,
yes.
Right? Is yeah. this a moment when I'm moving every year where I also want to think about a career change or I want to go back to school?
I'm understanding you now.
Maybe not.
Yeah. Yep.
So economic mobility is both the ability to use your house as an asset and to take cash out of it if you need to, but I also think it shifts your sense of stability where you can literally use that home as a launch pad for where you're really dreaming of going.
Yep.
Right? This one thing is secure. Now my physical health is better. My mental health is better. I feel stable. I know my rent isn't going to keep increasing. So I feel like yep. I can manage this. So now what am I really thinking about? I wanted to go back to school. I wanted to do this. I wanted to shift careers. Once this is taken care of, I can do other things.
Those are incredible, like intangibles to talk about, because if your day-to-day is kind of always operating on a pretty high like moment of anxiety,
yeah.
or just like the undercurrent of your life is just a little higher
yep.
anxiety than your average, it's hard for you to dream.
It is.
It's hard for you to plan for tomorrow, let alone for 5 years from now or 10
yep.
years from now. That makes a ton of sense to me. And it's really interesting to me to like even think about and dream about and imagine the stabilizing force mm-hmm. of having like your own home, your own set of keys, your own
yeah.
mailing address, where that anxiety and that current can kind of simmer down a little bit.
Yeah.
And you can pick up other pieces that maybe have been neglected or you just mm-hmm. didn't have the energy or like quite literally the bandwidth to pick up.
Exactly.
Yeah. What a gift. How did you get into the work that you're doing? I mean, executive director of Habitat for Humanity in Fort Collins, where'd that dream come from? Where were you exposed to mm-hmm. Habitat? I mean, how did you, what's the origin story
yeah.
of your current role, I guess?
I mean, it's a longer story and I'm going to condense it, but I was a student at CSU and I think I was studying politics, and that's not a popular subject with anybody, including me. But I admired Jimmy Carter, and
yeah.
like a lot of people that get involved with Habitat, there's a connection to the Carters getting involved.
Huge legacy.
I loved the way they lived out faith in a way that did not exclude people but welcome them.
Yep.
I loved that they did not believe in these political divides by party, really. That they wanted to bring people together in ways that cut across that. And I saw the Carters and the way that they honored the dignity of people, you know, that went far beyond things that divided.
Yep.
Right? And so to me, that was very admirable. And I remember a church had burned down in the South, and this was devastating to hear that we were still living in that place where churches were being burned down.
Mm.
And it was a Black church.
Yep.
And CSU was taking students to go build with Habitat for Humanity.
Really?
And at the time, I didn't get in. I didn't make the cut. There was a ton of student interest, which I loved.
Yeah.
And then after that, I went to grad school in San Francisco. And for some reason, I had a little hook in me for Habitat.
Yeah.
I applied to join them on staff. I didn't get a call.
Yeah.
And then I moved to San Diego, went into a temp agency. I walked in thinking I had a generic resume and I want to work at a nonprofit resume.
Really?
But I looked down at my generic resume and there was a typo in it. I was never going to give that to him. It was embarrassing.
Yeah.
So I go in weird to a temp agency and I say, I want to work at a nonprofit. And they say, that's very strange.
Yes.
So it's a couple weeks later when someone from the agency calls me and says, have you heard of Habitat for Humanity? They have a 1 week job. That 1 week in San Diego turned into 2 years.
Wow.
And I loved it. And I got to understand more about how the model actually worked.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this isn't a free-for-all Oprah, a house for you,
you get out.
You know, I thought like a lot of people think that Habitat just gives away houses. So
yeah.
Once I learned that people worked to buy their home and did sweat equity and paid
yep.
a mortgage and, you know, built their house and then bought it and that it recycled back into the community, all this goodness, I was hooked. And
yeah.
I just wanted to come home. And I wanted that impact to be in my own hometown, which was Fort Collins. So, yeah. You know, I then, over time, ended up back here in Fort Collins and was on staff. And it's been my third stint with Habitat, but I've been the director for 13 years.
That's incredible.
So
thank you for sharing that. And I do kind of find myself wondering if it was a two-year job in San Diego all the time, but they just called it a one-week job. can this person hang with us or not? So you must have done a really good job in 1 week to get 2 years, which is incredible.
I don't know if that's true.
I would love to. I mean, there's so much richness to even the small things that you just mentioned about Habitat that I'd love to dig in with you here and just give you a chance to share with me or anyone who's listening about how Habitat is so much more than just like giving a free house away. We're talking family development and stabilization, but you're explaining community development.
Yeah.
You're explaining like an impact on an entire city and community. So just talk to us for a little bit about how Habitat for Humanity like loves our city, one life at a time, one neighborhood at a time. What kind of things are you guys up to? What kind of impact are you making?
Yeah, well, thank you. You know, I do think that's the bit that surprises people, is that it's not just one house or that it's bigger than that. Things people don't know about Habitat. Habitat's a Christian organization, actually, that welcomes all people.
Yep.
So everyone, right? To be a homeowner, to be a volunteer, to be a donor. Our mission is actually bringing people together to build homes, communities, and hope.
Yeah.
So our organization's been here working over 30 years, and the way it actually works is that someone who wants to become a homeowner, they apply, and it's like going to a bank. There's a huge stack of paperwork. It's very revealing. It's very challenging.
Yeah.
There's a community of volunteers that do underwriting, just like a bank would. The standards are very high. And then once someone actually qualifies, it's a great deal for them. It is not a giveaway, though.
Okay.
So they're paying a no-interest mortgage.
Okay.
We're a nonprofit.
Yep.
We're not trying to make a profit.
Yeah.
They have a very affordable down payment. They save $1,500.
Yep.
But they are earning under 80% of the median income.
Okay.
So they are earning a low to moderate income, right? Which many, many professions in our community fall into this. That actually shocks people.
Yeah.
I want people to look at our chart and recognize themselves as someone that could become a home buyer.
Yeah.
Because there are teachers, there are police officers, there are firefighters.
Thousands of people that
would qualify, are over 10,000 households just in Fort Collins that would qualify income wise.
Yep.
So you can fill Moby Arena four times
with
the number of folks that would
qualify.
That's a great visual. Yeah. So people don't always know that it's for them. So they once you qualify, you're committing to doing those things, but you're also doing sweat equity. So adults contribute 200 hours to building their home.
Yeah.
And to doing home buyer education and to working alongside volunteers that are so diverse. I mean, it's the most amazing group of volunteers on site. You have the folks that came up with Jimmy Carter and have decided this is part of their retirement plan,
right?
To be on site Tuesday and Thursday through the winter, all year round, totally faithful, amazing. You have those folks, you have faith communities, diverse faith communities, which I think is amazing. A dozen plus faith organizations that come together every single year to build homes together.
Even beyond your stereotypical Christian church.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Which is what's so sweet, because we're really building a community together.
It is, and it's just great to see people that stand on that common ground and support a family that they don't know, that didn't come from their church or their faith organization.
It strikes me as really incredible, because there's not a lot of spaces in our culture right now where you can push all of the things that separate you aside to unite behind something good. And and your organization's doing that, consistently doing that.
Yeah, it might be my favorite part of it in this world that we live in right now, is that people are standing next to each other, raising walls, and not talking about what divides them.
Yeah.
They are talking about the values they share, and one of those values is neighbors coming together to support neighbors. And that you don't have to know everything else about them. You don't have to know their background. You don't have to know how they got there. There's no judgment in it. There is just, we are better when we stand together.
Yeah.
you know, and it is one of the most beautiful things about our work. And we get to see just outrageous generosity. Out at Harmony, we've been building at Harmony and Taft for a number of years.
Yep.
It's called the Harmony Cottages.
Yeah, I drove by just the other day, saw some of your work.
It has been the most incredible project. It has a great origin story on its own, but I won't belabor that. But what's wild about it is that when we started that project, we had been building, you know, a couple homes here, a couple homes there. So to take on a project of 48 homes felt totally impossible.
Yes.
It required a lot of faith and a whole lot of, wow, if we step over this threshold, will the community rise up to support us?
Yeah.
Huge risk. And guess what? We just raised the walls on the final four homes.
That's amazing.
The final four homes. I mean, we really just can't believe it. And what has happened with risk taking in this area has been future opportunity.
Yeah.
So we are... Gosh, we're just really blessed that we have a future ahead of us. We have 77 homes ahead of us.
Amazing.
In three different neighborhoods. So after Harmony, there's life.
Yeah.
Tell
me about some of these other intersections. Like, what, as I drive around town, where might I bump into some of your future work?
Yeah, you're going to bump into us in all across the town right now, which is amazing. So over by Trilby and LeMay, Heart of the Rockies Church donated land to a project that has Care Communities Apartments.
So hold on, they donated. Let's just give a shout. Let's give a shout
let's
out
do.
To Heart of the Rockies for donating land.
Shout out
to build homes for families. That's incredible.
Yes. It's,
that is incredible.
It's outrageous.
If you are listening to this and you have land, like, can more people donate land to you?
Is that a real question?
Yes. I suppose this is like a real thing. Like,
yes.
You are still in the business of taking more land.
We are in the business of taking land. That's a fact. Yes, no. I like that question. They can donate money even.
Yes, money and land. Both accepted at Habitat for Humanity.
You heard it here first. Yeah, no, it's not getting easier to do this. So yes, people can donate. No, it's outrageous that Heart of the Rockies Church did that. They actually
amazing.
Held that land for over 30 years with never having any intention to build a bigger building for the church. They always intended it to support the community in some way. They always had that vision. So to see the apartments there.
I love that is so good.
It's incredible. And our part of it is small and big at the same time. So we have 9 homes there, which are actually single family homes being built by Pooter High School.
Okay. 9 single family homes in this land that a church donated.
Yes.
I have to imagine that's fairly unique for a church to just give up land. And then again, because back to how you're not just building a house, you're building a community. I mean, this is community development.
It is.
Now you have Pooter School District involved in your work.
Yeah.
So tell me more about that, because I imagine you're helping educate students in the trades. You're helping develop and even plant seeds on, hey, you know, like what you do, like part of our community is you give back. Like this is part of what we do, is part of our. Tell me more about that partnership and what that looks like, because that sounds incredible.
Oh, it's so hard not to gush about that partnership. We've been working with Pooter High School and Pooter School District for a dozen years.
Yeah.
Students in a geometry and construction class, so they're learning geometry and construction, building a house modularly in the parking lot of the high school.
Really?
So they're learning math in the classroom, and then they're going outside and immediately applying the skills.
See,
so
this
yeah.
is new to me, because my kids are younger.
Okay.
So they haven't gotten to the part where they get to do math and swing a hammer at the same time yet.
That's... the coolest. So cool. Your kids will get
incredible.
There.
Incredible.
It's amazing. It really is amazing. And there are about 100 students that go through this program a year. So about 1,000 students have gone through this program, and they're building houses 13 and 14 currently.
Yeah.
So the program itself just really, it is so special because it is an entree, like you said, into the trades, construction, engineering. But there's also, wow, my mental health improved because I know that my life matters.
Yeah.
That's one of the things the students have said to us.
Yep.
I know I can work alongside my peers and make something happen. And I worked with that family that now is living under that roof safe because I did my bit. Mm-hmm. Like, it is so powerful to see students have that revelation that they can make a difference.
Well, we're, yeah, I mean, I have to think we're created for impact and we're created for significance. There's something in all of our hearts that wants to, like, build something that lasts, maybe
That's
even
right.
beyond our own life. And so this is, like, a really tangible way where they're getting exposed to that.
And, That's it. The teacher always says that. The teachers will drive by years later and say, I built that in high school.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that happening for sure. Okay, so that's happening more on the west side of town.
Yep.
Tell me about some other projects or where else we might see you guys at work.
Yeah, well, Hartford Homes is an unbelievable partner. They have been working with us for years. They are building a community over off of East Mulberry called Bloom.
Okay.
And Bloom is an awesome mixed income community with a lot of housing types.
Yeah.
But they have gone above and beyond in having affordable housing in that community.
Really?
So we are building cottages in that community. It's Hartford's product.
Okay.
But we're going to be building those homes and making them affordable to our buyers.
That's
so
awesome.
We'll be building 40 there with Hartford.
40 more.
40 more there. And then this last one, you're going to love this too, because you don't have just churches donating land. You have other amazing partners donating land.
Yeah.
So if you know Odell Brewing.
I do. Very well,
a lot of people
actually
know Odell Brewing. The amazing Odell family actually donated the parking lot. You go up the dirt to park.
Yeah.
They donated that space to Habitat for Humanity a couple of years ago.
Oh, man.
And what's so awesome about it
is... I parked in your land a couple weeks ago.
You did. You parked on our land. I hope you were a good parker.
I was a
parker.
Good, yes, I was.
Good job. We are going to be building condos there, which is a desperately missed product in our state. It has not been built for... they've not been built much for a number of years. So the Odell family donated the land. And Hartford Homes, being a deeply committed partner of ours and just really a genuine contributor to the local community.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a family-run business, right? They are donating all of the site development to make those condos affordable. So we're going to have 30 affordable condos, and they're going to have 110 that meet that missing middle need in our community.
Yeah.
So...
I love that so much. I love that. I love that churches and breweries. I mean, what a great picture.
Amazing.
That these, you know, I mean, you swing the hammer for a little bit. Who wouldn't, you know, maybe want to go out for a beer with your friends afterwards?
That sounds like afterwards a great, is the important part.
Yeah, not too much beforehand, because that will make that 2x4 go in a little wonky. which would be like really bad news for me, actually, because you said you've got to put sweat equity into these homes. You have to have like skin in the game.
You do.
Sweat equity financially. I mean, you're taking on a mortgage, so you've got all the things that people have to qualify to not only get a home, but stay in the home.
Yes.
I think that's wonderful, because you want like folks to be able to thrive generationally, which is the goal for sure. I'm really bad at building things.
Mm.
What on earth could I mean, like really bad. I mean, I've tried to do some home projects, and my wife comes in and she's like, that's crooked. I'm like, I know it's crooked. I just can't. I like my brain. I do words and I, that's what I can't.
Yep.
How could someone as inept as me, how could I be involved?
You know, I think you would be shocked by what you can do with the right skilled person leading you in a very kind and constructive way. There's a photograph over here on the wall of me with a team of folks after drywalling for a week in New Orleans. I am not good at these projects myself, but with the right leaders, I was capable of drywalling.
Yeah.
You know, and so we have a saying on the built site, I do it. We do it, and then you do it.
Yes.
So I do it, the skilled builder, the general contractor, or the, you know, the site supervisor, they do it, then you do it with them, and then you do it on your own.
I'm a pastor in town by church. So like I run this Love Foco podcast as a way to get great stories out in our community, but my like day job is a pastor. That sounds a little bit like how I try to model my faith. Like I'm living this. Come watch how I live this.
Right.
And we'll try to do this together a bit.
Yep.
And then I'll have you do it while I watch, and eventually you'll go and do it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's. I mean, this is
that's
how
it.
We learn. This is how we learn.
That's a fact.
Yes, even I can swing.
Even you. Even I can. You know. I mean, I've hit a thumb or two in my day, but yeah. I've also been surprised by what I'm capable of doing yeah. when I have the right team.
Well, and I want to ask you about that volunteering too, because I'm always looking for, and I'm always trying to promote around our city for others, ways where you can have intergenerational service. Mm. Because I think there's a lot of beauty in that.
Yeah.
Not only in finding your place in society, but also mm-hmm. the conversations that can happen. I would imagine, tell me what you know and what you see, because I know Poudre School District can go and do it.
Yep.
I would imagine, it sounds like CSU went to help rebuild a church. So mm-hmm. a bunch of college students. But yep. I would imagine there's also great opportunity for like grandparents to serve with their kids and serve mm-hmm. with their grandkids.
Yep.
And all of a sudden you've got like a whole family unit doing something together to give back. Mm-hmm. Do you see that? I mean, is that...
Oh yeah, absolutely. There are certainly limits on the age of folks working on a construction yeah. site and holding power tools and yeah. all of that. But we see a lot of intergenerational work on the build sites when a kid hits 16, right? Yeah. Like I've been counting down until I could be out on site with my kids building.
Yeah.
Powerful. I mean, we've had teams of people go travel and do builds where the, you know, youngest person is 16 and the oldest person's 80.
Wow.
So, you know, you can see that coming together. But even before then, before someone's out on site with a hard hat and holding a power tool, there are opportunities to serve, and families are doing it together.
Yep.
They're doing it at fundraising events. They're serving food literally together. Moms and son teams are doing that. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, lemonade stands that are really a total family affair.
Yeah.
Where every summer a family will say, our neighborhood gets together and does a lemonade stand with the biggest bakery selection you've ever seen in your life. It's a yeah. really amped up lemonade stand, but raising thousands of dollars a year to
wow.
build a home for someone else and doing it as a family,
yeah.
doing it as a community. It's something we see a lot of, and you'll see students come work at our thrift store and all yep. kinds of things.
Oh, that's so good. That's
yeah.
so good. And I want to get back to the fundraising piece, because as a nonprofit yeah. leader, I mean, this is always part of the gig.
Yep.
And so I want to ask you a little bit about some of your current projects and your future dreams and what it's going to take to get there.
Yeah.
But before we do, can you talk a little bit? I know you're the executive director here in Fort Collins, but you mm-hmm. guys also have an international footprint.
We do.
Habitat is working all over the world.
Yep.
You're not just building homes mm-hmm. in our neighborhood, but you're building in even pockets of the world that are less resourced than we are. And
yeah.
so just briefly, mm-hmm. talk about some of the global impact that you are a part of and what you get to see there too.
Mm. I love that question, Jeff, because it is part of what inspires me so much. In fact, there's a drum set sitting behind you on the shelf. And I remember being at a conference, and it was a global conference for Habitat. So Habitat's working in 70 countries.
Wow.
And at this conference, it might sound corny, but it just wasn't. We were given drums, and there was representation from all over the world, and we were asked to drum. And as I heard that drumming in a ballroom, a sterile place, nothing special about it, I just could imagine for the first time that really there was a heartbeat of hammers happening all over the world,
yeah.
that we were all very small and very local. But when you put us all together, it was this like outrageous act of love and generosity and support in all of these communities all over the world. So, I feel really proud to be part of something
yeah.
like that. As far as giving, it's a need that is ongoing, right? And people are feeling really unstable right now. Mm. You know, we know about cuts to SNAP benefits. We know about cuts to vouchers and housing. We know that people aren't depending on government support like they used to. I'm a believer that we should never depend on government support, that we should depend on each other.
Yeah.
It's an important resource for our work. So please hear me. Elected officials are very important. Policy is very important. Resources that come that way are very important.
Yeah.
But I think we can do it without that
yep.
if we stand up and do what we can.
Yeah.
And that means everybody doing what they can. It's not only the big wealthy donors
yeah.
that, can do the big thing. I think it's the small things coming together. It's the lemonade stand girls. Yeah. And it's everything all the way up to the Odell family donating land, right? I think that that's how you make change happen, is small.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of ways to reach a funding goal.
Yeah.
And as someone who you probably are in development conversations and funding conversations a lot, you realize there's going to be some big hitters. There has to be some big hitters.
You need that.
Not everybody's got 20 acres or however 50 acres or whatever they can donate. Some people do.
Yeah.
And so let me just remind, if you've got land and you're wondering what to do with it,
you can do that.
But thousands of people in our community want to make a difference.
Yes.
Thousands of people in our community want to see families stabilized, break the cycles of generational poverty, and increase the ability to see folks thrive for multiple generations and be part of our community for the future. Small gifts stacked up over time make a really big difference.
Huge.
They make a really big difference.
Huge. And we need it more than ever before. And I'm not just saying that because that's what nonprofit folks say. I am saying it because we have continued to go out on faith and ask the community to go with us. And we're building 21 homes this year.
Wow.
That is so much more than we have ever done before.
Yeah.
And so we need everybody to stick with us and be in it, because it is every single home has big donors and also has little donors and everything in between.
Yeah.
There's hundreds of donors for every single home that we build. Every single home is a grassroots community effort.
Yeah. Well, and price of, you said the average price of a home is in our area, 600 some, I can't remember the number you said, something like that.
Yeah.
But we both know this. It's not like lumber is just all of a sudden super cheap and affordable to get.
Yeah.
You got to buy lumber. You've got to buy shingles. You have to buy a cabinet. When you're building a house, there's all kinds of things that are going into that.
Yeah.
A ton of resources needed. And 21 homes is no joke.
Yes.
That's a real annual budget.
Yeah, it is. And it doesn't cost us less to build. I think that's the other thing that people don't always know, is that because we're using volunteers and because they are such a key part of our work, they're so vital, that doesn't mean it's free to build our homes, right?
Well, and you said 0% interest. So it's not like you're raking money off of this thing and stashing it away to make it happen. So it's just a lot of faithful people who want to make a difference.
That's right.
And so we'll make sure to put in the show notes, websites, and different ways that they can link up with you guys.
Great.
Volunteering, giving, learning more. That'll be an important, it's an important part of this podcast, so we can get your name out and get your information out. I'm curious if you have any last things you'd like to share with us just about maybe not just the end of this year, but even into the future, things that you're hoping to see or things that you're grateful for here in Fort Collins and with Habitat specifically.
Mm. I feel like I get to see the very best of our community. And as I think about who your listeners might be, I imagine that many of them have contributed to Habitat for Humanity, right? In a variety of ways. I love going out and talking to a group and finding out that, someone's aunt served on the board and someone else, was part of the volunteer group that started the affiliate and used to order the appliances, and someone else donates every year faithfully. We just find out how many people contribute to this work every time we're out there. So I guess what I'm grateful for is that.
Yeah.
I am grateful for the people that make it possible. The staff is really quite small compared to the volunteer effort and the donor effort that exists. And what I would hope is that we would all retain hope, that we would believe that we can still build the kind of community that we want to live in, and that we would think that this affordable housing challenge that exists is solvable.
Yes.
I think that's incredibly important for people to remember, that we designed this and that we can change it, that we are still creative beings that can make a home for our neighbors.
Yeah.
And that we can all thrive together.
I love that. I love that so much. It can feel insurmountable sometimes.
It can.
It can feel like a problem maybe too big for me to figure out how to solve.
Yeah.
But, wise minds, creative minds, persevering minds are coming together and making a real dent in this.
Yeah.
And so, grateful that you shared that. Next time You're driving around Harmony and
Taft.
And Taft.
Yep.
Next time you park in that gravel parking lot, think about, I know I will be thinking about you and thinking about this office and this conversation. And Chris, I'm just grateful for your leadership in our city, the work you and your entire team is doing, and may it continue. May 21 homes turn into 42 homes and 42 turn into 84. And
whew.
You can just keep seeing that. That work, it's incredible what you're doing. So thank you so much, and thanks for spending some time with me today.
Absolutely, thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Love FOCO Show. If today's conversation inspired you, share it with a friend who loves Fort Collins as much as you do. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and leave us a review. It helps more people discover us. To learn more about Love FOCO and find opportunities for loving our city one life at a time, visit lovefoco.com. For now, keep loving Fort Collins well.